Resolution 25-064, moved by Councilor Haskam, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:33
p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-065, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held February the 18th, 2025. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they've carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. We're back in open session again, so we'll ask for roll call.
Councillor Morley Haskam.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zula.
Councillor Mike Heffernan.
Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Public Works Superintendent Thomas Bowman.
And Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. For our delegations and presentations, we have the Miller Group, Pavement Asset Management Best Practices, Sustainable Thinking and Using Pavement Preservation and Recycling Methods to Lower Life Cycle Costs and Carbon Emissions. And I think representing the Miller Group is Matt now. Nagayam, is it? Or
nice.
Close enough?
Close, yeah. It was well done.
Nagayam?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. It's all yours. You can run us through. Hopefully we can keep the technology working with your microphone and the video and the and the slide presentation, so I'll turn it over to you.
I hope it'll be worth your time, and thank you again for giving us the opportunity to share this information with you. Yes, it is about pavement preservation as it relates to how we can preserve our roads, and when it does come to a point where you need to rehabilitate roads, you're looking at recycling options, and how this really is the future best practices when it comes to asset management of your roads. You can see this image here that we have on our title page of a slurry surfacing that's been applied on a street in Muskoka. And essentially, this road is generally in fair condition. It hasn't really started to crack yet. It is oxidized on the surface, as you can see, so there may be some frictional items that are starting to happen. But before the cracking happens, you're going to go and seal that road and preserve it to extend its life before, again, the cracking starts and it turns into a more expensive cost to repair. Let's talk a little bit further about this through the presentation.
Do you want me to change your slide?
Maybe. Is the dongle still plugged in?
Yeah.
Okay, next slide.
Can you move slide?
It's going on mine, but not on the presentation. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Mayor. Technology.
Oh, I know.
Okay. So before I... That's okay. I think I have control now. I'm just
okay.
Going back one, see what it does. No.
Try again. You might just have to tell Mary next slide.
Okay.
Sorry.
So before I...
I think it's just playing.
I think it's the timer on it, but
yeah.
I'll be quick on this slide. We're part of a bigger company called the Coalis Canada Company. There's our network of sister companies at the bottom there. And within our network, we have about 92 asphalt plants across the country. And at Coalis, we truly believe from coast to coast to coast, we do help connect Canada and our different communities. And so that's who Miller is part of as a bigger family. Going into this presentation today, the reason for talking about sustainability is it should be, I think, the forward thinking in all our municipalities on everything we're doing right now. And believe it or not, as you start looking at the economy, you start looking out for the environment, you start looking out for your carbon footprint, you know, greenhouse gases and emissions. Again, Carly, believe it or not, you are looking out for your dollars, your hard-earned tax dollars that you got to best utilize. It's about that long-term life of that asset. And by looking out for the emission side, again, the carbon footprint side, you are actually looking at the life cycle costing side as well. So let's explore that a bit further. Next slide, Carly. Again. So I wanted to highlight in Ontario what's happening to kind of gauge these conversations. Carly. We have OREG 40619, which is the excess soil management regulation that is now in play. Essentially, it is more costly now to excavate, haul, and dump materials from your job sites. So there's more of an encouragement to reduce waste and keep as much of your excavated materials on a job site as possible. Next slide, Carly. We have 58817, which is now your asset management regulation that's also fully in play. I believe it'll be in the summer of this year. So for municipalities to get appropriate levels of funding, they need to show that they have an inventory of what their assets are, what the conditions of those assets are, and what is your long-term maintenance plan and what budgetary requirements. I'm assuming that's something that Tom's been working on in your municipality and you guys probably have an idea of. Lastly, I wanted to highlight Ontario's climate change strategy, which hasn't been turned into a regulation yet, but it's more long-term thinking, how we're going to actually tackle greenhouse gas emissions in Ontario, working towards our net zero goals. What I wanted to highlight here is procurement. We will be moving towards a future where beyond the lowest bidder, there's going to be other qualifiers to who you procure to do work in your municipality. And one of those is the lowest emitting product, you know, the safest organization, the most experienced organization. But for the context of this presentation, it'll come down to the amount of emissions associated with the product that you're buying. Next product. So here we have a pavement condition curve. At the start of your curve, you're in a great condition, and obviously over the course of time, the condition of your pavement is going to deteriorate. Now, the time at which it deteriorates and to which degree depends on the climate. We're obviously in a northern climate here, so once you have cracks and you have infiltration of water in your pavement structure, along with freeze thaw, you're going to exponentially decline your condition of your pavement. Additionally, though, traffic influences that, so you could be on a low-volume road, but something happens, and now you have higher volumes, higher levels of truck. Now you're no longer structurally able to hold on to the loads that the road was originally designed for. It will then start to deteriorate as well. Go ahead. And traditionally, go again, what we do is we tend to wait for a trigger point, something that, you know, too many traffic accidents, potholes the size of half a meter, and there's cars on the side of the road, and you figure, you know what, we've got to do something on this road. Let's put a little bit of money on it. This is obviously not the most practical or forward-thinking method. It's costly. You're talking about very lengthy closure periods to get the extent of work done if you're building portions of your pavement structure. So not just the asphalt lifts, but you want to rebuild gravel as well if you've got to go all the way down to the native ground. And it's not the best way to optimize your network. So your whole network, all your roads within it, what's the best way to spend your dollars today that's going to stretch out the most amount of life across your network? What you should be looking at is what we call a preservation method. So essentially, as the pavement is deteriorating, you can just click them all. As it's progressively declining in its condition, you're preserving that asset. Before it can get to a point where it is fair to poor condition, you're continuously extending the life of it. And there's several municipalities in the south that have started to look at this. Obviously, funding can obviously dictate whether, you know, you have a certain amount of preservation dollars you're putting every year. But for a municipality like yourselves, where you have a lot of surface treatment roads, there is an opportunity to continue to use preservation tools to give yourself more life. But at some point, you are going to get to a point where you do need to rehabilitate that pavement, where you're going to need more structural capacity. And at that point, instead of, again, with excess soil management, having to rebuild the whole structure, why not recycle the structure you have there, increase that structural capacity, and by using hold-in-place recycling, you're able to do that. You're reusing materials on-site, you're lowering the carbon footprint of the work, and eliminating waste. And most importantly, your user delays. So you're traveling public, especially with the network of roads here, there's not a lot of detours. This is their only option in and out of areas. The last thing you want to do is create long closures for them and construction work that basically essentially shuts down roads on weeks to months on an end. And by preserving and recycling both of these treatments, which you'll learn more about, they're done while traffic is piloted. Nothing is shut down, and at the end of each working day, it's opened up to the public for travel, which you'll learn more about in a series of videos that we have for you, which I find is the best way to convey this information in a short period of time. So let's see if the videos will work. So what I wanted to highlight here on this page is this image really gives you the idea of why you should be preserving in your network. Believe it or not, in the U.S., this is a municipality, two municipalities. Somebody got the northbound of the street and someone got the southbound of the street. Go figure. The guys at the same time decided to rehabilitate the road in 2004. They just did a mill and overlay. About 6 years later, the municipality on the right decided to do some crack sealing, and then they did a conventional micro-surfacing on it, and then this photo was taken in 2018, so 14 years after original construction, and you can see which side you would travel on, which side you'd put your taxpayers on, and essentially the benefits of preserving. If you can click the next view, so just to highlight in preserving, you're preventing and slowing down that water, you're essentially waterproofing your roads. You're also preventing raveling and oxidization. So you're restoring some surface integrity, your surface friction. You're able to, you know, fix minor irregularities, so minor depressions, minor cracking that's happened on the road. And it's environmentally friendly when you consider over the 30-year, 40-year life cycle of that road, how much work did you put in? How much diesel fuel was burnt in order to maintain a good serviceability and ride quality of that road? Looking at hold-in-place recycling, on the, if you can just hit it twice, it's gonna just, on the very left-hand side is hot mix asphalt. So it's about 680 megajoules per ton to produce hot mix asphalt. And a lot of that has to do with the upstream energy. So we're talking about at the quarry, blasting, crushing stone, sorting it, hauling it at the asphalt plants, your burners at about 300 degrees Celsius just to heat all the moisture off the stone before you can even mix it. All of that is cut out when you go into cold-in-place recycling, which is the far right one. It's about one-fifth of the energy, and that's because everything is really done on-site using materials you already own. The pollutant really involved in that work is the new binder that you're bringing to site to stabilize the mix that you're recycling. So with that information, I'm hoping I can now show you these videos that can explain the products. He's going to start.
We hope, man. We hope.
Nobody's talking, drop the dirty video.
It's okay. So I learned I'm your first one like this, so you get all the kinks out of the way in the first one, and then yeah.
Can counselor mute mics?
Mute mics, turn all the mics off.
Turn them off? Just on the, even on the top, there's that green button.
Seen it all, done it all, and are the trendsetters for safe, quality, sustainable construction and maintenance practices. Seal coats, also known as surface treatments, provide effective pavement preservation to a variety of roadways. Alternate applications of asphalt emulsion and cover aggregate are placed to produce durable, flexible, and cost-effective surfaces. A reinforced seal coat, referred to as a stress-absorbing membrane interlayer, or SAMI, is recommended over cracked pavements and or poor base conditions, which are too costly to repair or remove. This process is performed simply by incorporating a non-woven geotextile paving fabric, saturated in binder
Pretty sure we have the videos on YouTube. I will share it with you for your own viewing, and you can share with your constituents. And I think I'll just speak over them for the sake of our AV crew. To stop sharing again.
Okay.
No, please. I feel like I should have came early and done a dry rehearsal.
No, it's not your fault. It's the it's two separate computers that the audio interferes, so it's very hard to get it not to interfere. So, no, it's not your fault whatsoever. You were here good and early.
So far to get us to this point. And then let's get into the product. So here we have a surface treatment operation. This specifically is what we call a SAMI, stress absorbing membrane interlayer. And that's we add a geotextile layer to a surface ahead of the surface treatment. The video will focus on that shortly. We do like to highlight that we are a over 100-year-old company, starting with AJ Krupp, which was the original company, and you can see some of our different photos, historic, that we've collected over the course of our time. Surface treatment, it's also called seal coat or surface dressing in certain parts of the world, or chip seal. The operation essentially is an application of a asphalt cement binder in its emulsified form, and then you put a layer of a cover aggregate. You can do this either in a single lift or a double lift. As I mentioned at the start, you can also put in a geotextile. So this is ideal for surfaces that look like this, where you have levels of cracking. You're also perhaps maybe in low-lying areas where you have a water table that comes pretty high, where you have a floodplain coming in. So it's nice to just give you that extra tensile strength, and also preventing any water infiltration into that pavement, which is also very susceptible to water. And the operation involves laying that geotextile, putting a nice thick application of oil in it initially, and then it's followed by the aggregate. And this is typically done in a double operation, and with surface treatment, as any preservation, the same day that we install it, we pilot traffic as we're doing it, and once we're done, it is open to traffic. And sometimes these treatments are covered with what we call fog seal, which we strongly recommend. It essentially is a dust suppressant, but also prevents you from seeing the flying chips that crack windshields and whatnot. So this is done quite prevalently in the South. I'll have a spot or a chat with Tom later to see if it's something you guys do. There's the website there, worldresource.org. It's on the brochures as well that we've handed out to you, and there's lots of more information on all the different products and services there. Next video here is microsurfacing. I believe this was taken in Manitoba. Manitoba actually puts out $15 million worth of microsurfacing every year on the Trans-Canada Highway. It's something that you can put on very high volume roads, but you can also really put them on any classification. There's slurry surfacing and microsurfacing. They're essentially the same concept. It's crushed aggregate, that emulsified asphalt, cement, and water that's applied in a slurry form. In a microsurfacing, you have a more abrasive aggregate, a higher friction rating for, you know, higher truck volumes, like 400 series highways, any of your MTO Kings Roads highways, pardon me, around here. And you can see here how it goes down this emulsified brown color and it cures to its black format. In a microsurfacing, you can use a continuous paver, so you can basically bring more materials to each run, so you have less what we call joints between each pull. In a slurry, everything is loaded onto a slurry truck, and once the slurry truck runs out of material, another one comes and plugs into your paver at the back, and so you have more continuous joints on, or more transverse joints on it, but that's essentially microsurfacing. Here you have cold-in-place recycling. This is the recycling train from the top view, a nice little drone shot on it. This is, again, a rehabilitation method. So now you're nearing your end of life and you want to, again, get yourself 25 or 30 years. It's intended for higher volume roads, but also if you have surface treatment roads that you're now starting to see a lot of rutting on and you do think, hey, we've got to do something to beef the structure up, it's a great option for you to go in and recycle. And this includes pulverizing as well, which I know you guys do in your municipality, but when you pulverize, do you stabilize? And if you do stabilize, are you using asphalt cement, or are you using lime, or are you using cement, Portland cement powder? So here you have the crusher on the recycling train. Here you've got your shuttle buggy, or your, sorry, pickup elevator that's hooked up to the paver in the back there. You can see even on a road like this, there's patches on the left-hand side, but there's different kind of mixes, but by the time you recycle it, you get this more uniform mix. In Ontario, we like to classify them as either a partial depth or a full depth process. A partial depth means you're just recycling your asphalt layers, so what we call 100% wrap. In a full depth process, you're now including the underlying gravel as well. So the process is typically between 4 and 6 inches deep. So again, in that 6 inches, are you getting some gravel underneath? If so, do you need more asphalt cement in order to stabilize it? And then it's paved using conventional paving equipment and rolling operation. You can also recycle your wrap just off-site in a mobile plant, as you can see here. And this is ideal for if you have high wrap available, and you can put in a recycled wrap layer also on your road. This is something the ministry is looking at doing for the Bradford Bypass. We have mountains of wrap in the south, and it makes sense for us to kind of, you know, make use of this mineral resource that you have. When it comes to cold in place recycling, you can top it with a single surface treatment as well, depending on traffic volumes, but it traditionally is capped with a layer of asphalt on top, a 40 or 50 millimeter layer of asphalt. So that is cold in place recycling. And again, I didn't do the video and audio justice. There's a nice rock ballad that comes in these songs, so I will share that with you for the future. I also wanted to give you an idea of another product that's unique to Miller. We call this our flexible asphalt coal technology. You can see the condition of that road there. This municipality did not have the money available to them to put in the type of rehabilitation you need. So when you see this extent of potholing, raveling, they had some rutting issues as well, you've got to go at least half a meter to address the problem and reconstruct, and they didn't have that money. So with this unique product, it's a layer of cold mix asphalt that we pave using conventional paving, but it's flexible. So it'll heave on the underside in the winter, but you won't see it on the surface, and it's essentially crack-proof. And we did this last year in the fall, and we have over 7 years of experience doing this mix. It's mainly done in Haliburton, Muskoka area. We're hoping to introduce it to Parry Sound, to McKellar as well, as a unique product that's out there to handle some of your climate and geographical needs that, you know, we don't see sometimes in the south. If you go to the next picture, here's some examples again of the candidates. So where you've got shallow bedrock, where you've got, you know, gravel roads that are constantly frost heaving and potholing, you can essentially, it'd be nice to patch the potholes to begin with, but even if you don't, the cold mix will go and fill it in, and it's paved using conventional paving equipment. We do top it with a little bit of a screening just to choke the surface. It is an open graded mix, so what we mean by that is it's essentially a bunch of chips that are the same size, and they may want to roll around, so we like to choke and lock everything in as it's still curing and setting up. This slide I actually added because Tom mentioned how it's important to understand how in an ideal scenario, you've got a pavement structure that is very well built. You've got a nice strong base, what we call a subgrade soil, and your subgrade can be native or it could be fill. For you guys, it could be bedrock. You have your granular subbase, you have a granular base, so you're perpetually building your pavement structure up with really good crushed aggregates, they're well draining, and then you've got your asphalt layers on top. For surface treatment, it could be your double surface treatment, a really good granular base, and again, that subgrade that's sitting well. But when you look at a road like that, you know, it is ideal for preservation, right? There's nothing really deep within the structure that's giving you an issue, so let's keep preserving it. Let's maintain its good condition. Why wait till something fails before we spend some money on that asset? But once you start seeing some cracking on it, and what we call top-down cracking, so it's coming from the surface, nothing really in the structure starting to fail yet, it's a good option to partial depth recycle. So again, only recycling the asphalt layers. Once you start seeing what we call fatigue issues, so now we are having, due to loading, we're seeing, or maybe even water is now washing out some of the fines in your granular, it's giving areas for depression and settlement from all the loading. You're getting cracks, we call bottom-up cracking. So because a layer below is failing, it's now seeing asphalt cracks, you now got to go a little bit deeper to recycle. You've got to do a full depth option. So instead of doing your 4 inches, you're maybe looking at a 6-inch or an 8-inch recycling process for that road. So let's bring it all back together and look at the pavement condition curve and look at costs. These are relative. Please don't hold us to these costs. I'm just bringing them up to bring scale. We'll start with a fog seal. So a fog seal there is at $2.50 a square, and essentially while your pavement is still very, very good, you're just providing some skid resistance and also any oxidation, any premature raveling, you're able to prevent it. Again, for your surface treatment roads, your gravel roads, you can use it as a dust suppressant, and it's just a hardening layer. Next, as you move along, is your slurry seal. At $7.50, this is always a single application that's done. But if you've got a certain roadway where you have crossfall and profile issues, so the grade of the road is not nice and smooth for the water to flow, and your plows are just going to be, you know, shaving up that single layer that you put down, you probably need to upgrade to something further, which is looking at a microsurfacing or even a surface treatment, or what we call a chip seal, which are now at the $10 a square meter price. These are more intended for pavements that are a little bit further down in their condition, so now you're at a good to fair condition. But I do want to highlight that any of these preservation techniques you can really do for whatever condition of your road, but your expected service life should be accordingly. If you put it on a very good road, it's going to last you 10, 15, possibly even 20 years. If you put it on a road that's already had potholing and cracking issues, it's a holding strategy. You're just trying to get yourself to a point where you can spend some money to bring it to the rideability that you would like. Once you get near your end of life, you're closer to your $15 a square meter. Now you're actually going in and recycling. And then finally, when it's really in poor condition and you know you've got to go deeper and you do more of a full-depth recycling option or full-depth pulverizing, you're looking at $20 a square meter. So that's going across. And just to give you some comparison, again, this is just for scale. If you're doing a single lift of asphalt, you're looking at about, go ahead, you can do all three of them. A single lift of asphalt, you'll find about $25 a square, $50 a square, and $75 a square. And that costing involves the milling operation, but also hauling and dumping it, paying the dumping fees or whoever's receiving that material, and then coming back and paving it to site, which, again, with all the other processes that we've talked about, you wouldn't have to do. Lastly, I want to close by just giving you an example. Here's a township looking at a 20,000 square meter road. They essentially started the project in 2025, and they did a full depth. They rebuilt the structure, and they spent a certain amount of money. 10 years later, they decided to do a shave and pave. Another 10 years later, they did another shave and pave. And then lastly, in the year 2055, so 30 years since the original construction, it's near its end of life, they got to rebuild it. Over the course of its life, they spent, you can see there, about $20 million for the sake of argument for this example. But let's look at that same road servicing the same traffic. They did a full construction again in 25, but instead of waiting 10 years, at year 5, they put a micro on it. And guess what? That micro, they did again another 5 years later. Now you're at a point in year 40, so about 15 years since the original construction. You've been able to preserve it up until that point for 15 years. It's now time to rehabilitate it. But instead of doing a shave and pave, we're going to do a cold-in-place recycling, again, lowering our emissions. And based on the traffic volumes, I don't need asphalt on it. I'm going to put a double chip seal on it. You're now able to take yourself to year 41 where you want to put, that should say year 45 where you're going to put another micro on it. And over the course of that, you spent $8 million. So it gives you an idea of scale, but it's that long-term thinking, sustainable thinking. And what I like to say to close out my presentation is the decisions we make today are inherited by the people in our position in the future. So for you to set them up for success means that you guys are already thinking about sustainability and long-term cost savings, carbon emission reductions within your municipality. And you can do that for your roads using preservation and recycling. So I'd like to thank you for your time. I apologize for the technical IT issues, but we got through it. It was supposed to be a 30-minute presentation. I think I went not too bad. So, but the floor is open to questions. I don't know, Carly, if I'm supposed to do that or if...
Yeah,
no, I think that's great. And people in the audience and people on Zoom?
Yes. If there's any questions, any comments, yes, please.
If you can go two slides back where
yeah.
It shows the...
Is the cost one?
Yeah, one more slide.
How did I know you?
That one there.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at that pricing, where
yeah.
does the flexible asphalt coal technology and with, so that's with the geotextile
yes.
mat?
Yeah.
So where does that fit in here on the on the scale on the left? So
yeah.
say you went, poor.
Yeah.
And then pricing. So where would that sort of fit in?
No. Great question. It's very comparable to the cost of mixed asphalt in terms of it's price to make. The saving side of it is the fact that you don't have to excavate and haul anything from the original site. So in terms of comparison, I'd say maybe you're looking at the $30 to $40 a square meter price. But again, this is looking at an example of doing very small volumes. So obviously the more work you do, your price will go down per square.
And then the geotextile, like what kind of lifespan does that have?
I would say you can get 10 years, possibly even 15. It depends on the condition of the road when it first went down. I'm looking at Peter in the room. Peter, I don't know what's the longest you've seen a Sammy last.
Yeah, 15 years, I would say. They're applied on oftentimes on an existing surface that's cracked, so it's not getting any more deterioration. You're putting a shingle on the road, you're keeping the water out, so it's going to last as long as the chips on top last.
So, yeah, so that was, so then there's two sort of products that I was looking at. It was the geotextile.
Yep.
And then this newer product that you were talking about that you've been using for the last 7 years?
Yes.
That's the flexible asphalt coal technology.
Correct, yeah.
So the difference between those, because, the other part of this was I was hoping at some point that you could go with the public works superintendent and possibly with the engineer and look at certain roads with your knowledge and
yes.
the products that you've used to be able to say if it's applicable and
for sure
just to see if that product is gonna just so there's some comparison compared to a complete rebuild and some of these other products.
It is a service that we do provide through our technical services group, so we will come, we will tour roads, we will provide a letter of recommendation all free of cost. We're here to promote the information and for us really it doesn't matter who does the work. We'd like to say all the contractors in our space. We're here representing ISSA, so the International Surfacing Association as well. And so our group of contractors, we're well-versed in the technologies that are available, and we all do good work. And so it's just important that municipalities are, open to non-traditional methods of managing the roads, because we find that the, what we call shave and pave, right, or mill and fills, become the go-to strategy for how to maintain roads, which aren't necessarily the best bang for your buck.
If I might just say, Matt, that fact, just to clear it up, you saw the picture, it's being applied to a roadway that is, you would not put hot mix asphalt on. It would just crack the next year. So it's not we'll do this instead of hot mix. It's one is better than the other for that application. And that's what we can help. We can help identify those areas. The price point is roughly the same, but one product will last better on the typical road.
Great. That's sort of what I was getting at too, is that are we using the best product for the road conditions that we have here? So
definitely. But we can come and part of my plans, we were talking to Tom before we started. So we will come in the spring, wait for a couple of freestyle cycles to finish, and then we'll take a look at your roads. And yeah, we'd love to give you some thoughts on what are your options. Thank you for your question.
Now, I probably don't have to ask, when you talk about the length of the road, how long it's going to actually last. You don't sign any guarantees, of course. But,
you know what? It's all OPSS. And so with an OPSS, there's their one-year warranties,
yeah.
Right, that is provided. But with these processes, if they are going to fail, you'll see immediately. It's premature. You'll have raveling, so things will come loose if you don't have enough stuff to bind it together. Or if you put too much of that binder in there, it's going to start to rot and shove. Right, so those are, and you see those right away because, again, we open to traffic right away, so we get the real world loading on it. And so, and they're time dependent. The specs also only permit this work in the summer months, so starting in May and going until about September. Outside of that period, when temperatures are dipping below 0 degrees, an asphalt emulsion has quite a bit of water in it. and the last thing you want to do is put water near 0 degrees. And if there's heavy periods of rain, you should not be doing this work either, because it's designed that emulsion to break, set, and cure, so essentially turn back to its asphalt cement state. If you're adding more water to that chemistry, it's also not in the best benefit.
Other questions from the public? Council? Well, thank you very much for your presentation.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate your patience, and I look forward to coming back up here and looking at your roads.
Excellent.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, folks. Thanks again for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Again, I really appreciate your coming in person.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you. Resolution 25-066, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the deputation from Matt Nyagan, Operations Manager with the Miller Group, to provide a presentation on pavement asset management best practices for Council's information. Call the question, all those in favor?
Discussion?
Oh, yeah, okay.
So this all came about because we all of Council received a email from Ed Deisauer, and I want to make sure that the section of Hardy's Road remains part of the conversation. And not only Hardy's Road, but all of our roads, to ensure that we're using the proper product at the right time for the conditions of that road. Because I believe that Hardy's Road was a double surface treatment in 2014. I think it was a cost of $360,000, $200,000 of which came from the gas tax. So. And if you look at our roads needs study, it indicates that Hardy's Road is high on the list. I think it's number one of sections of road that should be done in the roads needs study. So the main point is that, you know, there's certain roads that our citizens are bringing to our attention, and just want to make sure that that remains part of the conversation.
Yeah, I think that would be part of Road Super Tom certainly going out with this particular person or whoever and looking at the condition of the roads. It's hard to paint with one brush the entire section of road. There was one section that was brought to our attention on Hardy's. It didn't go right to the very end of Sunnyshore Park, but it was mainly on the way in and the corner. And I remember years back with our road super at the time, what he did, because mainly deterioration and dust suppressant. He put tar and chip into a certain length of each the main subdivisions. He did the Maplewood one, he did Lakeside, and I believe McKellar Lake Road. He went in so far. He was starting it back then. And since then, as you say, it's been extended to the end of Sunnyshore Park. And, but I would just have to wait for Tom to look at everything and see the condition. And yes, it'll certainly be on the priority list.
And another thing that I noticed going through the different documents was that crack seal was one of the processes that we employed at one point in time to reduce the deterioration of the roads, and I don't believe that that's been employed for quite a few years. The last reference that I seen, but it could have been used after that, was 2015 Manitowabing Estates Road had crack seal before the slurry seal was applied. But I do recall that one section of Center Road had some crack seal done maybe about 10 years ago. But I think that to ensure that we're employing all of the processes that extend the life of the roads in the township, And so just during budget discussions that, you know, those processes such as crack seal is, we question if it is being used, because even the roads need studying. I think the asset management plan says that there should be $15,000 worth of crack sealing done annually on McKellar Township's surface treated roads.
Yeah, there's always been that argument, I guess, of people living in various subdivisions, not just on Center Road and Herdville necessarily, and Blackwater, but which roads are done when. And I know some roads were never done as far as a hard surface, and others were done twice. So we have to try to be fair with the people in each area of the township, and which ones are holding up, which ones aren't. I didn't mention to this particular person who is here tonight, but I mean, we've had tar and chip put on, and it lasted 2 years. That's why I asked about any guarantees, or and there won't be any. 1 year, he says, I think, through the OPSS. And so we have to look carefully at the product itself and try to get some kind of a guarantee based on, you know, what they're starting with, obviously the condition of the road itself. And that's one of the things I think we're going to have some difficulty with, guarantee the lifespan of that particular treatment. We'll try what we can, and different suggestions that are mentioned here, I think, but we may have to do it in sections as well, depending on the budgets, and see what holds up and what doesn't. Not everything that was applied is necessarily going to work the best in our township. And as you've mentioned before too, and I think people have talked about the foundation of the road. You know, what is it really like underneath? You can do all you want to the surface, but is it going to survive if the foundation is not any good? So, many things to think about in the budget process. Any other points? Call the question then. All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-067, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby move into Committee of the Whole at
7:20
p.m. as Council acts as the Cemetery Board to review a cemetery monument request as applied for by Angela Reed. All questions, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, we have a quick presentation.
Yeah, I'll provide a brief summary. So Deputy Clerk Mary Smith and Public Works Superintendent Tom Stoneman did a report to Council regarding this request. As Council is the Cemetery Board, we're bringing this request for consideration and approval. Angela Reed had purchased plots in the Lakeview Cemetery, and the request is that one single monument be placed over three plots. The only contravention to the cemetery bylaw is, I will say, the width, so the span of the monument, as it spans from three different lots. The other measurements of the monument are in compliance with the cemetery bylaw. Tom Stoneman provided an opinion to say that he has no problem with that monument being placed in the cemetery. And if there's any further questions, let us know.
Okay, it was good. I'm looking at the original plot that they had, and I didn't know how that was going to fit in there, but I see it's a new range and a new site and everything. And it's range Y,
yes,
which is a long way down.
It's right at the end.
I guess my question is, and then we've put the road in there since, and the road isn't interfering with this site? Because I know that's where it does the arc.
Yeah, it does do the arc. Tom will have to, in the summer, move a little bit of gravel, but it's we've moved the numbering a little bit, so it's actually starting not near the road now. So it was close to the road, now it's further down.
Because one thing I looked at when we talked about the road a few years back was that we should be closing certain plots that are going to be affected by the road so that they're not sold. But I guess we're doing...
We've done that.
You've done that?
Yes.
Okay, and they're just moving the road a wee bit to keep other ones available?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I see nothing wrong with the actual application, I mean, especially, and I like the idea at the end of the summary. just based on the fact that it's, what is it, lower than, it's going to be longer, but it's much lower than the other ones, and I thought that was good to see that. Because it's always hard to see, especially when we're looking at centimeters, meters, feet, and I don't know what all here, trying to compare and what's it actually look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've been trying to keep a standard. It's difficult when people come in and see some of the first ones that were put in there. That one tailor, I think, it's huge. And since then, there have been others, too, that haven't really followed the plan. So I think it's good that we have the actual structure in place, that we try to make them standardized, that they don't become, I would say, how would I say, wouldn't really fit the standards of the cemetery. But here, I think it's fairly acceptable, and it's not just the fact that it's that far away, but I think it probably won't even be that noticeable how it's different from the others. So, and it's over the three plots, I think. So,
yeah.
I think that's a good idea too. Other opinions from council?
So,
Councilor Keckin.
So the dimensions that it gives here, the base shall be a maximum. This is in the bylaw. Maximum of 4 foot 6 inches in width and 20 inches in depth. So that's the slab underneath the monument is 20 inches thick. It's just that it's hard to sort of interpret, like, you know, is there the base itself, is it supposed to be a certain sort of thickness and width to ensure that it can support the monument above?
Yes. It is. I've talked to Steve, and Angela has spoken with Steve as well regarding the base to make sure that it is thick enough to put the weight of the monument on top. But it's still the correct width to the bylaw.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just really the length that is outside of the bylaw.
Yes.
The length or the width, sorry?
Yeah, I know it's confusing. I don't like width or length, so the...
Okay, I think
yes.
I get it now. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Because I think that's the long-term concern, because over time, the cemetery crew eventually have to go and stabilize monuments that have shifted over time, so just to ensure that it's going to be adequate to support the monuments above.
I think we looked at this as opposed to the what was the other they were looking at?
Columbarium.
Columbariums, yes. And we haven't really gone that the route. I know some have, but it was recommended not to. So I think this sort of resolves the problem at this stage. There might be other people in the future come through with the columbarium idea, and we may have to consider that, but I think this seems to work. Any further discussion? Anything from the public? Since it's committee of the whole? So we have resolution 25-068, moved by Councillor Haskell, second by Councillor Ryland. Resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby rise and report from Committee of the Whole at 7:27 p.m. and reconvene into regular session. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-069, moved by Councillor Keckinen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the request from Angela Reed to install a monument in the Lakeview Cemetery on the Reed/Latour family plots. We placed over three family-owned plots, dimensions of base 94 inches long, 8 inches, there's nothing in there, I guess that's wide.
What it says here.
Okay, well.
Unless you take wine as thick.
Yeah. put both in there.
And that's why I think there's one dimension missing. Like, it gives the length, it gives the thickness, but it doesn't give the
depth.
The depth.
Did it say 20 inches?
Now let me finish the resolution. We'll see if it covers.
Sure.
94 inches long, 8 inches thick. The stone is 84 inches, and the height of the stone is 24 inches. And further direct staff to inform Torrance Funeral Home of this approval. Okay, now open for discussion. Councilor Peck.
So I believe there's one dimension missing, and that's it has the thickness of the base, it has the length of the base, but it's missing the width of the base.
Which I think on the report, was that the 20 inches? The width?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mary, didn't you say the depth was 20 inches for the base? That's what I understood you to say.
20 inches
yes.
of depth.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is.
So would it be 46 in width?
A picture would work.
Yes. And I did go over it with Chris with the measuring tape as well, just so I could get a picture of it. But this is what Steve gave me. So
okay.
On the report.
Yep.
Yeah.
So do we want to keep the resolution then with that missing dimension, knowing that these dimensions came from Torrance Funeral Home?
I don't think if it came from Torrance and they're actually installing it, or do they contract it out? I don't know how they do it.
They install, I believe.
Okay. I would think they would know what they were doing, and as long as we don't get a surprise.
It's the width one that's missing. Then is that what I'm hearing?
Can't they provide a drawing at least, or a sketch of?
I can request that.
Well, it would be good to know for sure in case we blunder into something because we didn't understand what this describes, right?
I don't know if Angela wants to speak about it. We're just going over the dimensions, and I have done the report, and that is exactly what Steve had given me, and that's what he has given you guys, right? Yeah. Did you want to speak about it, or?
Which is the missing dimension?
The width? Width.
Well, you can actually give the resolution to them.
Stone?
The
base. The base, yeah.
I believe they're 20 inches deep.
Yeah, so that's the
20 inches.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Referred to as depth, maybe, and then the 6 inch thickness.
It's
yeah. confusing.
It's even confusing in the bylaw to pictures.
I'm a simple guy, pictures help.
Yes.
So.
Well, we have a 3D printer, don't we, now?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need.
We could feed these in and see what we get, right?
So we've added 20 inches deep, and everything else has stayed the same, just a friendly amendment. Any further discussion? All the questions then, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. So what's the next step for them?
We'll pass the resolution on to Torrance Funeral Home and then they will be contacted with the family.
Does that work okay? I know it's been a long drawn out process here, but hopefully we'll get it right. Okay, we're on to resolution 25-070, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Haskin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the February 4th, 2025 regular meeting of Council and the January 31st, 2025 special meeting of Council of the Budget as circulated. Any discussion of those? Question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Is there staying for another issue?
Yeah.
Certainly welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting if you wish.
sometimes.
On to planning. Have resolution 25-071, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the application to amend the Township's zoning bylaw for the property legally described as concession 14, lot 29, 42R-22320, parts 2 and 3, where the requested amendment seeks to change the zoning designation of the subject property from Waterfront Residential 1, WF1, to Rural Residential, RR, while adhering to all other requirements of the Rural Residential, the RR zone, and further that the application is hereby deemed complete. Discussion? Councilor Rath?
Perhaps I'm misunderstanding something, but I'm not sure of the page. Not easy to tell on here, but on item number 3.2, it says, are there any easements or restrictive covenants affecting the subject land? And it says yes, and it says, if yes, describe the easement, and there's no description for that. It's not the end of the world, but it would, you know, given that that's stated right there, maybe I'm missing, or maybe it's an addendum or something, but...
Patrick, are you aware of any easements for the Jameson property?
Oh, there's that right away. It's in there.
I believe there's just a right of way for an existing road.
Any further questions, discussion? Call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And resolution 25-072, moved by Councillor Haslam, second by Councillor Ryan. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the proposed consent to create one new waterfront lot and a right-of-way for access at 656 Broadbent Road, fronting on Little Rearbottom Lake, the south part of Lot 2, Concession 7, Township of McKellar, as applied for by Dennis Lee in application number B42/2024-MCK McKellar, subject to the following conditions. Number one, payment of a fee in lieu of parkland is required in the Township of McKellar fees and charges bylaw. Number two, 911 addressing for the proposed new lot. And number three, payment of any applicable planning board fees. Maybe the old, Patrick is on there. He can maybe speak to it just quickly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Yes, I can speak to that one. This application, as you stated, is for a new waterfront lot on Little Rearbottom Lake. The lot will be accessed by an existing right-of-way through the subject lands, and there is some type 1 fish habitat identified, as I showed in my report. This habitat is different than the original MNR habitat that was identified in the first place, and the thought is that the proposed lot will have at least 15 meters clear of that original MNR fish habitat. The applicants did have a study done on the shoreline, and it is thought that there would be at least 15 meters free of the fish habitat for dock. And I think the applicants might be in the audience, Mr. Smith.
Yes. Whether they want to speak to it, give him the mic anyway, we may have a question.
Just in case there's a question.
We're just, my wife and I, we bought here 15, 16 years ago, and we built a house that we moved, a cottage that we moved up to, and now we want a separator building lot for our daughter. She also wants to move up here. So that's the purpose of the application that you have in front of you.
I just had one question for Patrick, I guess. The right-of-way that leads into the property now, this is prior to the severance, would that person who has the severance also have access to that first part of the right-of-way? Should that be in there, or is that understood?
The proposal is to use the existing right-of-way and continue it through this through the retained lands to the severed, yes.
Right, but the existing right-of-way wouldn't include necessarily the person who will own the severed piece. So that person's name would have to be added to that section of right-of-way, would it not?
That is correct, yes.
Do we have to put that in as a condition, or is that something that's just understood?
Sorry, couldn't get to my mic there. It should be put in as a condition, yes, just to make sure.
And the other question, the biologist's report, is that something that should be included in all of this, or is it just for added information? I'm just thinking of down the road, if anybody questioned, especially with the fish habitat, it's good to have the biologist's report somewhere recognized. But other than in your comments, it doesn't really show up anywhere.
Right, so perhaps we should require a 5126 to add that report on title.
I think it'd be useful. I don't want to add any extra cost, but I'm just thinking if that would alleviate any future problems that might arise. I think it's especially important when you mentioned about the fish habitat and looking at the M&R mapping, it looked like most of it's fish habitat. So, and I know it's a difference between type 1 and type 2, and adjustments have been made in the property itself so it would meet the requirements of the WF4, which is a good idea, I think. So it wouldn't have to be a rezoning. But I'd just like to ensure, I guess, that there is some property there that's free of the fish habitat for the dockage or whatever might go in.
Right, so the report can go in the 5126 agreement to make sure that's on title. And then, of course, any dock would have to go through an approval process anyway.
Right. Any further comments, Councillor Keckin?
Just on page 2 with the property description. In the second paragraph, I'm just wondering if that's accurate, where it says all of Lot 2 concession, Lot 2 concession 7 lying south of Little Squaw Lake, because I looked on the map here and I couldn't find the Little Squaw Lake. Should it say Little Rubon Lake?
That was the property description that was on title. That was the pen description of the lands. I don't know if that they can change names or what that's from.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it used to be called Little Squaw Lake at one time.
Okay.
And then it was changed to Little Rubottom.
So the amendment is to add to conditions number 4 that the severed lot have deeded access to the right-of-way for access, and 5 that the 5126 agreement be entered into to include the ecological study on title. Now, is that ecological, is that, or biological, or, I don't know, I want to make sure we have the right reference, is that what it's called?
Aquatic assessment.
Yeah, it names itself as an aquatic assessment, so.
I believe it aquatic assessment would cover it.
Any the amendment. We'll call, first of all, discussion on that, on the amendment. If everybody's in agreement with that, call the vote on the amendment. All those in favor? None opposed? Any further discussion on the amended resolution? Anything else, Patrick, to add?
I do not have anything to add, no.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Call the question then on the amended resolution. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
The other door, Dennis.
Yeah.
Dennis.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Is it for Patrick or is he already gone?
he's there, but that's it for him. Thanks for attending, Patrick.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have resolution 25-073, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, seconded by Councilor Zulak. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the District of Parry Sound Social Services Administration Board for December the 20th, 2024, for information purposes. Any discussion of those minutes? Councilor Kekkonen?
Just note on page 2, it mentions Ms. McKenzie highlighted the importance of municipalities encouraging affordable housing developments through their official plans. Is that something we should note while we're going through this process of reviewing the official plan and zoning?
It's something we could pass on to John Jackson, planner, I would think, yes.
Where is that on page 2, Mike?
Sorry. That's the second paragraph, last line, 7.2.
Right, okay.
Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-074, moved by Councillor Ryan, seconded by Councillor Haskin. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the Parry Sound Area Planning Board for November the 25th, 2024, for information purposes. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-075, moved by Councillor Zulak, seconded by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the District of Parry Sound West, Belvedere Heights, Board of Management for November the 27th, 2024, for information purposes. Any discussion of those minutes? Councillor Kekkonen?
Page 3, 13.1, PH 92-24, wondering if that should say move out of?
Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-076, moved by Councillor Haskin, seconded by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives Report T-2025-02, Statement of the Council Remuneration, and Expenses 2024 from Treasurer Rochan Cantia for information purposes. So just change that to remuneration. The N M becomes an N. discussion on those? Councilor Kay?
For my expenses, there was one expense that the township paid for, which was not anything that I claimed for myself, that seems to be added onto the expenses, and that was for the CPAC expenses for the meeting that was held January 10th, 2024. So I didn't receive any of those, that wasn't anything that I claimed for myself. The township passed a resolution that they would pay for those expenses, and I just submitted a receipt that those expenses, so I don't think that that should, mine should be $100 just like everybody else's.
Okay, that can be passed on to Roche.
So do we want to defer this then until Roshan can? Because it's really his report, not ours, right? So
yeah. Can't do that. We have until the end of March, I think it said. So that would give him enough time to make the
sure.
change.
I don't think there's any disagreement at all. It's just a...
Okay. Councilor Haskin, is your motion? You want to defer it?
Yeah, just we'll defer it till the next meeting. Roshan looks at it.
Okay, put the question out to everyone then for a deferral. All those in favor? None opposed? Resolution 25-077, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives report FD-2025-02, month-end status update for January 2025 from Fire Chief Robert Morrison for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-078, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Haskin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives the accounts payable preliminary check run report from Treasurer Roshan Kentia for information purposes. Discussion? Councilor Kekkonen?
Just wondering about the, there is on, what page is this? Page, page number. Anyways, it'd be the second page of that information package, and it refers to the professional services rendered St. Stephen's driveway transfer. So has the owners to the north received any additional information regarding the easement on title? There was a revised sketch which they had agreed to, and
yes, I honestly can't remember right now where it was left off, but they did receive a letter from the township solicitor, and they were in agreeance to what the township was proposing for boundary lines. And I believe I was speaking to Tulloch to do a reference plan, as that's the next step in creating the easement. They are very busy right now, so they most likely won't be doing a reference plan until spring, and then that will be presented to the owners so that they can agree or disagree in the township, and then we'll move forward that way.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Zulak?
On page 4, it says holdback, weeks holdback.
Whereabouts is it, Deb?
On page 4.
Yeah.
It's on number under transportation, 284, weeks construction. It says materials and supply hold back on invoices.
Yeah.
I have to double check the invoices. I feel like that's gravel, but I'm not sure.
I believe it is.
So what is that hold back?
Sounds as if they weren't paid the full amount. It was a holdback until the product was delivered.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Because all the gravel was under a tender contract.
Okay. All right.
And then I have
but I haven't defined it here. There's a lot in here about the truck.
Hmm. Yes, seemed to be a number of repairs.
Yeah. So was that for the...
Do you remember who the vendor was, Debbie?
Constable.
Yeah, Constable, and then there was a lot of them. Here we go, Constable, Freightliner, repair Freightliner 20 and 19, and then...
Page number?
Oh.
I see.
Four.
Them. Four, okay.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, right at
a
the
lot
top
of them
page
for
four,
the Freightliner,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
It's like quite a bit. Like there's like $10,000.
Yeah.
Then Craig's Welding Freightliner.
They were doing a different plow setup this year to better maintain the roads. So Craig's Welding may be with those costs because I know he was working on the plows. I have to double check with Tom about the Constable ones. Yeah.
Like there was mention about one of the trucks going off the road on West Road.
It hasn't been repaired yet.
So
that's not one of these.
It wouldn't be in this truck run, no.
No. Yeah, so see there's a lot there. There's 15,000, 1,000, 13,000, 1,000. I'm just wondering what, you know, how old is that truck and what's going on? Maybe Tom can give us a better idea.
Page four.
I still haven't found page four. I mean,
oh, really?
If you're saying it's page four.
That's
it
not
says
page
four.
Four.
It's at the
well,
top.
There's more than one.
Right.
Yeah.
In the corner.
Top right.
Invoice number 385. Yeah. Do you see it, David?
Not page four.
Okay. Well, it's that.
Well, you found transportation?
On page four, yes.
And that's on page three. And then page four is Constable Towing at the bottom of the page.
It's
because no?
There's multiple page fours.
The
so
other page four.
It's
I see, scroll down.
There's four check runs that he's printed out.
Anyways,
we can ask Tom to get back to you.
Yeah, and is the Constable Towing charges, is that for towing? Or
no, it's
for
repairs. Constable's now doing some of our truck repairs.
Okay.
Okay.
Councilor Ryan?
On the first page four. Under fire protection services, we've got a bunch of bills here for propane. Can anybody tell me how much we're paying per liter for the propane? Because there is a wide variance locally. But.
I'd have to check. We are usually fairly competitive with propane as we have different sites that use it, but I can't tell you the price per liter.
Okay.
I have one more. On page two.
Which page? Two.
Page two at the very top. Bench Municipal Law and Governance.
That's the Integrity Commissioner's
yearly
fees.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So every year we have to pay that?
Correct,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Retainer, like?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay.
Just wondering, under Building Department, it's referring to the cloud print. Oak Cloud Permit Incorporated, so any feedback with how that's working out?
Well, Chris enjoys the software for its user ability. Everything is documented in one spot. People that are pulling a building permit get notifications via email when their inspections are done and whatnot, so it is a really user-friendly system.
Good, so it's working out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Accounts payable. All the question, all those in favor? Not opposed, carried. Resolution 25-079, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak, be it resolved by the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Whitestone McKellar Lions Club letter requesting permission to place Christmas hamper and toy donation boxes at the McKellar Community Center and Library for the period from November through to December 21st, 2025. Further, the council does give permission for the Whitestone McKellar Lions Club to place the Christmas hamper and toy donation boxes at the McKellar Community Center and Library for the period from November through to December 21st, 2025, as requested. Discussion? Now they'll look at the actual location, I guess, in the library and the community center. I assume that's all going to be reviewed by somebody that
yeah,
in the middle of a doorway or anything.
No, they're typically in the vestibule, so the main entrance, the community center, in that little vestibule, and then the one with the township office and library door entrance. There's usually, sorry, there's one on the side of the library door.
Councilor Zula.
And I recall last year when they had asked to do that, I brought that to council and they said it was fine. But they set a thing up there.
You brought it to council?
Yeah.
So we have a resolution somewhere?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember if there's a resolution, but I think in my report I had said about the library report, I had said about the Lions wanting to put a box there, you know,
mm-hmm.
for donations, because there is some families in McKellar, and they found that it worked fantastic.
No, I think that's excellent. I just wanted to clarify whether you told us they were going to do it, or whether they were requesting
to do it. They were doing
it. Okay. That's what I thought.
They were doing it.
And I think staff can ensure that they're not intrusive or in a good location.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to interfere with the pickleballers and the badminton players.
Yeah, don't put it in the middle of the pickleball
court. Or all the angry taxpayers coming in to pay the tax bill. Oh yeah, I'm going to donate too.
Any further discussion?
I just think there was a bit of confusion with the Salvation Army and the Lions. So we always get the Salvation Army bins. We get two for the vestibule here in the office, and then two over in the community hall. But there was a confusion as to where that those bins were going to Perry Sound and not into McKellar and Dunchurch. So they have clarified it with the Salvation Army, and now we're back to staying within the community.
Excellent. Yeah, sounds good. Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Unopposed? Carried. Resolution 25-080, moved by Councillor Haslam, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby give bylaw number 2025-10, being a bylaw to authorize the execution of an agreement for a bylaw enforcement officer for the Township of McKellar and to appoint a bylaw enforcement officer for the Township of McKellar. The third reading and further passed in open council this 18th day of February 2025. Discussion? Councillor Kekkonen.
On the bylaw itself, should it say and read a third time this 18th day of February?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it had the fourth on there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm still scrolling here. And all the highlighted sections, those were the changes in particular that you made?
Correct.
Yeah. Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. The unfinished business. Anything you wish to bring forward there? Any new business?
I think we had a discussion at a previous council meeting about recognizing members of the community that had passed away, and I believe in 1996 there was a memorial policy that the township had passed. I'm just wondering, you know, we've had sadly the passing of Arnold Crossman on February the 14th, that I don't believe there's many people through the decades that haven't had the opportunity to meet and benefit from his work and his knowledge and advice, that I think would be appropriate to provide some type of a recognition or at least a sympathy condolence card from the council, from the township.
Maybe, what was the year you said?
I think it was 1996 that there was, 1996, there was a memorial policy established by council.
Maybe we could do a research on that and see. It's always a difficult, who do you miss in this situation? And that's the only thing that worries me a bit. Because I'm sure there are people as well that have contributed in different ways that we don't even know about. And so it makes it difficult to center out certain ones. Unless it's a request from the family or something like that. But we can check to see what that policy says and see what was done then. Any public notices, announcements, inquiries, reports by council members? Any committee meetings? Councilor Hasman?
Yes, I had a recreation committee meeting. The minutes almost made it on the agenda, but I think a few hours later, a day maybe or something. So
last talk to the secretary. Who's that? Oh, that's you. Okay.
We had a couple of visitors. Brandy Stoneman came, did a good presentation to say that she's willing to work with REC, and I guess there was water issues in the basement. But fortunately for the REC committee, it wasn't in their area. So so we thanked her.
What area was it in?
Good question.
By the Agricultural Society's stuff.
They'll be at our next meeting.
Don't look good and dry down there now,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Joyce Campbell, the Whitestone McKellar Lions Club, was there and donated $250 to the McKellar Recreation to be used for children's activities. And so different people through the years have made donations to the township that specifically wanted it for children's activities. It worries me a little bit that it's going into a reserve account, but really not earmarked for that. So I did talk to Rojan when I took the check into him that maybe possibly look at a special reserve account that is earmarked for children's activities. So if that was okay.
Sounds good.
Another thing I could touch on, yoga. The activity has went well for the past year for two classes in January. After discussions, the committee has decided not to compensate the yoga instructor with pay from this date forward. The committee is agreeable to donate the use of the community center for this well-established community activity in 2025. So it was a concern of the committee, and I think it might even been mentioned at this table that, ease back up. But the idea was to try, again, get another program going in the municipality. Okay, it's going now. Okay, you better, cover your own costs by charging the people utilizing it. Chinese martial arts, the potential activity is currently on hold as the committee and office have not received further required documentation. We had the 6th annual Kids Fish Derby this past weekend. It was a success, and I'd like to thank volunteers on the recreation committee, and also the at least a half a dozen firefighters showed up, and they got dragged through the snow and the tug of war, so that was good. We have the snowmobile run coming up on March 2nd that will leave from McKellar Lake and arrive here at the community center for refreshments. Our next meeting, we're going to look at March break ideas for the kids. We didn't have time to talk budget, but we will get that passed the next, but I've ensured Roseanne that there won't be an increase. In fact, there'll be a decrease in expenses, but also revenue. But the difference is what's going to make Roseanne happy. That, doesn't have to come to the council with, oh, here we go. Okay, meeting time change for staff is our meetings will be starting at 4 p.m. instead of 3:30. I don't know if that needs to be changed on the web page.
Are you still the last Thursday of the month, though? Because this
Well, yeah, we couldn't get a quorum So we shifted the meeting to the next weekend after, which was the first one in February. We will be having the last one in February, the last Thursday in February also is the next meeting. Something that came up was, I guess different members attend different activities in the hall, and they say that most of the people, when they come in to activities such as cards or any activity, do not bring indoor shoes. They just come in with their wet shoes, and of course the floor is getting all dirty and everything. So it's an idea that came up at the recreation committee was made possibly a sign being put up saying please remove outdoor shoes, or whether there's something we could do to get people to maybe change their habits going forward. And of course it was brought thinking that's been the cause of the damage to the floor, which potentially it could be have been some of it, but I did mention to them that staff is going to be looking into gathering information for a floor replacement. I think that's what we kind of decided at the last meeting. So that's basically it in the minutes. We'll be following up next meeting.
Yeah, I was just thinking with the indoor-outdoor footwear that it's going to be a little difficult with some of the seniors coming in. I think that they're not going to carry something with them and put them on, so might have to go like the dentist office and have those little
booties
that you put on.
Yeah, and I'm finding now it's even harder to get my foot up to change my shoes. I'm a young senior.
That's going to be difficult because especially if you rent out the place to a dance or a wedding or whatever, you can't control that. So you're right, with the user groups, maybe you could to a certain extent. But
yeah, I don't know whether like a friendly letter off or something, or whether we put a sign up at the door, please change footwear if possible, or whether we just accept it. It's kind of up to council, I guess, and staff to think about it, but if you think it's just going to be more of an aggravation than it's worth, well.
Well, it's difficult to enforce, that's all, with
mm-hmm.
different things that go on there, and like if you have a reunion, or if you have somebody's anniversary or birthday, they don't come prepared with an extra set of footwear, so.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if there's such thing at each of the entrances, a foot cleaning or footwear cleaning station where you go and you put your boot in and.
That's only on farms.
Yeah, I think some do apparently. They do bring the other pair of shoes and they put them on when they're taking their coat off, kind of thing. But then there's the ones that don't. So.
Would almost apply to every entrance, like us walking in with our shoes on a carpet.
We're guilty of it too, so probably nothing we can do. It's a community center, and everybody's welcome, I guess, no matter what they're wearing, even if they're not wearing anything, I guess.
Any other reports? Committees? Resolution 25-081, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak, be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the consent agenda for correspondence. Anything you wish to pull from that to discuss? Councilor Zulak?
25.3.
Okay.
Did we not get a flag for autism last year and we're going to have it? Like
yes, we questioned where it was going to actually be displayed.
Did we get it?
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look around the office. I feel like we did purchase one, but I haven't seen it.
I thought we did, and I thought we were going to have, like, for Autism Day, we were going to have it out there. So that's why when I seen that.
I think it's in the safe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll get it up.
You can't display out on the flagpole, certainly, because it's just, there is that shorter one, but for decorum, I don't think, unless you have a third pole put out, I don't think you can do another flag.
You just have something outside.
Maybe you hear at the entrance, yes.
Yeah. I mean, if we got the flag.
Yeah.
I thought that was the whole purpose, was to.
Yeah, whether we look at getting, something that would hold a flag, that there. And, put at the entrance or something.
Yeah, that might be a solution. Anything else there? All the questions, all those in favor, none opposed, carried. comments from people in person or on Zoom with items on the agenda? Hearing none. Resolution 25-082, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Hassman. Be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby give bylaw number 2025-12. In the bylaw to confirm the proceedings of Council, the first and second reading, further read a third time and passed in open Council is 18th day of February 2025. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-083, moved to Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Pekkanen. Be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar adjourn this meeting at
8:14 p.m.
to meet again on March the 4th, 2025 for a regular meeting of Council or at the call of the Mayor. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.